The Bible reading for today is Daniel 7, which you can find on page 1388. In the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon, Daniel had a dream, and visions passed through his mind as he was lying in bed. He wrote down the substance of his dream. Daniel said, "In my vision at night I looked, and there before me were the four great winds of heaven churning up the great sea. Four great beasts, each different from the others, came up out of the sea. The first was like a lion and had the wings of an eagle. I watched until its wings were torn off and it was lifted from the ground so that it stood on 2 feet like a human being and the mind of a human was given to it. And there before me was a second beast which looked like a bear. It was raised up on one of its sides and had 3 ribs in its mouth between its teeth. It was told, 'Get up and eat your fill of flesh.' After that, I looked and there before me was another beast, one that looked like a leopard, and on its back it had 4 wings like those of a bird. This beast had 4 heads, and it was given authority to rule. After that, in my vision at night, I looked, and there before me was a 4th beast, terrifying and frightening and very powerful. It had large iron teeth. It crushed and devoured its victims and trampled underfoot whatever was left. It was different from all the former beasts, and it had 10 horns. While I was thinking about the horns, there before me was another horn, a little one, which came up among them, and 3 of the 1st horns were uprooted before it. This horn had eyes like the eyes of a human being and a mouth that spoke boastfully. As I looked, thrones were set in place, and the Ancient of Days took his seat. His clothing was as white as snow. The hair of his head was white like wool. His throne was flaming with fire, and its wheels were all ablaze. A river of fire was flowing, coming out from before him. Thousands upon thousands attended him. 10,000 times 10,000 stood before him. The court was seated, and the books were opened. Then I continued to watch because of the boastful words the horn was speaking. I kept looking until the beast was slain and its body destroyed and thrown into the blazing fire. The other beasts had been stripped of their authority, but were allowed to live for a period of time. In my vision at night, I looked, and there before me was one like the Son of Man, coming with the clouds of heaven. He approached the Ancient of Days and was led into his presence. He was given authority, glory, and sovereign power. All nations and people of every language worshipped him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion that will not pass away, and his kingdom is one that will never be destroyed. I, Daniel, was troubled in spirit, and the visions that passed through my mind disturbed me. I approached one of those standing there and asked him the meaning of this. So he told me and gave me the interpretation of these things. The 4 great beasts are 4 kings that will rise from the earth, but the holy people of the Most High will receive the kingdom and possess it forever. Yes, forever and ever. Then I wanted to know the meaning of the 4th beast, which was different from all the others and the most terrifying, with its iron teeth and bronze claws. The beast that crushed and devoured its victims and trampled underfoot whatever was left. I also wanted to know about the 10 horns on its head and about the other horn that came up, before which 3 of them fell, the horn that looked more imposing than... more imposing than the others that had eyes and mouth that spoke boastfully. As I watched, this horn was waging war against the holy people and defeating them, until the Ancient of Days came and pronounced judgment in favour of the holy people of the Most High, and the time came when they possessed the kingdom. He gave me this explanation. The 4th beast is a 4th kingdom that will appear on earth. It will be different from all the other kingdoms and will devour the earth, trampling it down and crushing it. The 10 horns are 10 kingdoms who will come from this kingdom. After them, another king will rise, different from the earlier ones. He will subdue 3 kings. He will speak against the Most High and oppress his holy people and try to change the set times and the laws. The holy people will be delivered into his hands for a time, and half a time. But the court will sit, and his power will be taken away and completely destroyed forever. Then the sovereignty, power, and greatness of all the kingdoms under heaven will be handed over to the holy people of the Most High. His kingdom will be an everlasting kingdom, and all rulers will worship and obey him. This is the end of the matter. I, Daniel, was deeply troubled by my thoughts, and my face turned pale, but I kept the matter to myself. Thank you.
Thanks, Anna. Good job persevering really well with whatever that sound was. Thank you. It's great when you get those passages that are just super self-explanatory, and you can just kind of keep moving on, keep going. It's kind of like imagine like the worst visit to the zoo ever. I feel like this passage kind of captures that. There's like a lion with wings and it can walk upright, a bear devouring ribs that's given permission to eat its fill of flesh, a flying leopard with four heads, a beast so terrifying, Daniel, you can't actually liken it to any living thing anywhere. Kind of think like, what on earth is going on in this chapter? This scene belongs in a horror movie, right? And it's pretty different from the rest of Daniel that we've seen so far that has been very just kind of narrative driven. So why is this chapter here? What's going on? We're venturing into a genre in the Bible called apocalyptic literature. Now, this kind of literature, apocalyptic, it's known for its grand and often terrifying imagery and symbolism. And here is what apocalyptic literature does for us. Apocalyptic comes from this Greek word that it just means to reveal, for something to be revealed. That's actually what that word means, right? So here's what this revelation-type literature does for us. It allows us to get a glimpse behind the curtain to see world events from a heavenly perspective. It allows us to get a glimpse behind the curtain to see world events from a heavenly perspective. That's what's happening here. This is what's being revealed. Now, for us today, we read this kind of writing, don't we? And we need to keep something in the back of our minds. See, we need to remember that those big images and those symbols, they don't change their meaning for us today based on the world events that happen around us. That's not the way to interpret the Bible. Instead, their meaning, you know, the meaning of Daniel 7, it's the same for us today as it was for the people it was first written down to. Now, we're given a little bit of context for this vision, aren't we, in verse 1. We read this morning in verse 1 that Daniel received this vision from God in the first year of King Belshazzar's reign over Babylon. Now, this is a really helpful thing to know because that's roughly a decade before the events of Daniel chapter 5, when Belshazzar sees the writing on the wall and Daniel is called to interpret it. See, this means that Daniel had this vision before that party took place in chapter 5 and before Belshazzar and the kingdom of Babylon fell. But it also means that Daniel had this vision before he was thrown into the lion's den in chapter 6 under Darius. Now, last week I said that Daniel could never have kept going if he didn't know what he knew about God. He could never have kept going if he didn't know what he knew about God. Daniel could never have resisted being lured in by the world's proud independence from God. He could never have kept calm and carried on serving and praying and trusting in God. He couldn't have done that if he didn't know what he did about God, if God hadn't revealed who he is. And if he didn't know about the world powers who oppose God. See, Daniel 7 shows us why Daniel doesn't give in, but remains trusting in God. See, here's what we learn from Daniel 7. Here's our take-home point to remember about what Daniel 7 is about. See, no matter how bad things might look to us, God has already won the final victory, and his reign gives us lasting hope. That's what we need to take away today. No matter how bad things might look to us, God has already won the final victory, and his reign gives us lasting hope. We've been reminded again and again throughout Daniel that God reigns, haven't we? God is the one who raises up kings and kingdoms and deposes kings and kingdoms. And God is the one who rescues and delivers. We've also seen how God has sustained his people throughout their exile, while they've been living under Babylonian rule and now Persian rule. And now, with really vivid imagery that is supposed to kind of blow our minds like it did for Daniel, we see this all from God's perspective. And we learn no matter how bad things might look to us as we look around the world, God has already won the final victory and his reign gives us lasting hope. Point one on the screen behind me says, history is beastly. The history is full of terrible atrocities wrought by people in power, isn't it? Whether it's Nebuchadnezzar or Hitler or Pol Pot. Daniel 7 helps us see that the recurrence of these events, it shouldn't actually be a surprise. And it helps us see the reality of what human kingdoms look like, what they act like. Beasts. It's the most unsettling scene in Daniel so far, isn't it? Here we read of four world powers and one horrific human leader, that little horn. These world powers have the desires of a beast, but the intelligence and the mind of a human, which is a terrifying combination. Now, here's an image from ChatGPT that ChatGPT came up with to capture the kind of scene that's playing out for Daniel. It got the leopard a bit wrong. Three heads. There's four in the passage. That's right. But it's a pretty horrifying picture, right? And we need to know that in this vision, it's not actually a picture for Daniel. He's there being terrified. So we read in verse 2 to 3 what Daniel sees. He says, in my vision at night I looked, and there before me were the four winds of heaven churning up the great sea. The four great beasts, each different from the other, came up out of the sea. And as Daniel continues looking, he sees that the first was like a lion, but with the wings of an eagle. And its wings are torn off as it's lifted up from the ground to stand like a human. It's given the mind of a human. The second beast, which looked like a bear, had three ribs in its mouth that it was chewing on, and it's told, get up and eat your fill. The third beast looks like a leopard. It's got four wings on its back, four heads, and this beast is given authority to rule. But none of these beasts compare with the fourth one, do they? Daniel can't compare it to any sort of living creature because it's so unfamiliar to him. But it's nevertheless terrifying. In verse 7 to 8, we read, after that, in my vision at night I looked, and there before me was a fourth beast, terrifying and frightening and very powerful. It had iron teeth. It crushed and devoured its victims and trampled underfoot whatever was left. It was different from all the former beasts, and it had 10 horns. In his vision, Daniel is given the opportunity to find out who these beasts are and what they represent. And this is what we find out in the first part of verse 17. The four great beasts are four kings that will rise from the earth. But Daniel can't stop thinking about that fourth beast, can he? He says in verse 19, I wanted to know the meaning of the fourth beast, which was different from all the others and most terrifying. With its iron teeth and bronze claws, the beast that crushed and devoured and trampled underfoot whatever was left. And then there's that horn. In verse 8, when Daniel first sees it, it's this small little horn. But it comes up among the 10 other horns on the fourth beast and it uproots the first three. And then Daniel sees that this horn, it has the eyes of a human and a mouth that speaks boastfully against God in verse 24. And more than that, we read in verse 25, he will speak against the Most High and oppress his holy people and try to change the set times and the laws. The holy people will be delivered into his hands for a time, times, and half a time. You think, what on earth is going on with this scene? Who are these kings and their kingdoms that we need to watch out for? Who's this little horn meant to be? What are we meant to take from all this? I think that history is beastly, full of world powers that devour, dominate, and destroy. We've already met two of these kingdoms in Daniel, haven't we? And their kings, firstly in Nebuchadnezzar and his kingdom, the lion with wings. See, Babylon had the image of a lion at its gate, and it was the symbol of Babylon that they chose to represent their great strength. But later on in the Bible, in Jeremiah, in chapter 49, verse 19 to 22, Jeremiah the prophet, who's a mouthpiece for God, speaks of King Nebuchadnezzar using a lion and an eagle to describe him. This helps us understand who this first kingdom is and its king in Daniel chapter 7. It's Babylon, King Nebuchadnezzar. Now, knowing the kingdoms that came after Babylon helps us kind of figure out a bit of the rest, doesn't it? We already know that the next is Medo-Persia, a kingdom made of Media and Persia. It had one weaker side, one stronger side, just as the bear does in the vision. And then Greece was the next empire to rule after them. They ruled the known world. They were led by Alexander the Great, who swept across all of Persia, rapidly like a leopard, conquering it all by the age of 32. But then the fourth kingdom, it still stands out, doesn't it? It's unlike any beast that Daniel can describe. It's even more terrifying, even more hungry for destruction. And it's worth saying that opinion is really divided as to which kingdom this fourth beast refers to in history. It's generally tied to either Greece or Rome. Greece, because that kingdom was divided up into smaller kingdoms when Alexander the Great died, and Rome, because of its furious and destructive conquest. But really, it's the little horn that draws our attention, isn't it? Just as it drew Daniel's. So what's going on? Well, remember that apocalyptic literature gives us a glimpse behind the curtain of what happens in the world from God's perspective. And this isn't the only chapter in the Bible that mentions a little horn like this, or something that represents what the little horn is like. In Daniel 8, we see the same thing happening. A little horn grows and comes to set itself up against God in power and might, stopping God's people from worshipping him. And in that chapter, we're told that the little horn sprouts up from Greece. But when we come to the book of Revelation, at the end of the Bible, in chapter 13, we read of something else. This horn kind of seems to appear again. We read of this great beast coming out of the sea. And we read of Satan waiting for it so that he can pass on his authority and use it to oppose God and his people. And this is what we read about that beast in Revelation 13. The beast I saw resembled a leopard, but had the feet like those of a bear and a mouth like that of a lion. Descriptions of the different beasts from Daniel 7. And in Revelation 13, verse 5, we read, the beast was given a mouth to utter proud words and blasphemies and to exercise its authority for 42 months. It opened its mouth to blaspheme God and to slander his name and his dwelling place and those who live in heaven. Again, it sounds awfully familiar, doesn't it? It's just like the little horn in Daniel 7. And there are two things I think this kind of helps us understand, this image, this message that's being shown. The first one, hopefully from Revelation 13, is that in the background of these great devouring kingdoms of humanity, Satan prowls around, working to oppose God and his people. It's a reality we actually can't ignore. But second, it shows us that Daniel is teaching us about the overall pattern of history. See, there was a ruler who came from Greek origins, from one of the kingdoms of Alexander's splintered empire. He reigned during the 2nd century BC, and he set himself up in the temple in Jerusalem, made it impossible for God's people to make sacrifices to God or to worship God there. Instead, he sought to make them worship him instead. It was a time of bloodshed, of terror, of great persecution for God's people. And his name was Antiochus Epiphanes, the little horn who set himself up against God. But what's really interesting is that Antiochus Epiphanes isn't the last person to act this way. See, when John wrote Revelation, he spoke of this beast appearing again. And when John wrote about this beast, it wasn't to talk about Antiochus, because he was long dead at that stage. It was actually to prepare God's people for the persecution they were going to face in Rome. Preparing them again for that persecution, just as Daniel was preparing his people for persecution. Now, Don Carson has this to say. He says, if I mistake not, this beast recurs throughout history. He is Antiochus Epiphanes, but he's also Nero. He's the whole Roman Caesar institution that tries to destroy the church. He even says he's Pope Innocent III who sent the Crusades off. He's also Stalin and Hitler and Pol Pot. This beast is any human power that raises itself up against God and that dominates, devours, and tramples his world and his people. Now, one commentary puts what Daniel 7 is trying to show us and point out this way. He says, Daniel's vision is telling us that history is beastly and it is scary. He wants us to hold a clear realism about life in this world. Can't just hide from it, pretend it's not happening. And why does it prepare us for this? It's so that we aren't surprised when opposition to God rises, and we aren't surprised when we see the results of their evil in the world. Now, life in Australia for us is so far removed from anything like this, isn't it? Which is why Daniel 7 is so important. I just want you to imagine with me walking down the street, and you walk past the doorway that's in front of you, and someone jumps out at you and surprises you. They try to shock you and scare you. And you're really frightened because you don't expect it at all. You don't know what's going to happen. Well, Daniel 7 helps us actually watch the person running ahead of us to hide behind the doorway. Daniel 7 helps us know what to expect. The purpose being that when they jump out at us, it isn't a surprise, it's expected. And while still unsettling, we actually know what the final outcome is. And this is what we see next in this passage. Point two, God has won and God will always win. See, I reckon there would have been a thought running through Daniel's mind as he saw all of this. It would have been, wow, things are even worse than I thought. Even worse than I thought. He's witnessed the power and might of Babylon and Persia already. Now he's seen them from God's perspective as the terrifying and this seemingly unstoppable beasts or beasts that they are. Things are even worse than we think. See, this is the feeling that we're meant to have too as we read this. To see behind the curtain, to get a glimpse of things from God's perspective, it's not supposed to make us feel comfortable. It's meant to give us a reality check. Things are even worse than we think. And we can't hide away from the reality of that. We can't cover our ears to the injustice we hear about in the world and overseas, even in our backyard. We can't cover our eyes to the reality of the spiritual war which is raging on in the background as Satan works behind these events to oppose God and his people. We can't pretend it's not happening. But while this is the case, that things are even worse than we think, Daniel 7 helps us see that God is more powerful than we could possibly imagine. God is more powerful than we could possibly imagine. God has won and God will always win. See, Daniel's given that terrifying vision in verse 1 to 8, but then what happens next? His attention is torn away from that terrifying scene to a scene that shows totally the opposite reaction you'd expect from someone who's just seen those beasts raging across the world. The reaction of anyone else would be to run and hide. The beasts are raging, devouring, destroying, terrifying. And what is God's response? The Ancient of Days, he doesn't run away, he doesn't hide. Nor does he go off and sharpen his sword. Like, there's no, you know, Lord of the Rings Two Towers scene here where God walks around like Aragorn trying to convince everyone we're all probably going to die, but it's good because we're fighting evil. None of that. What does God do? He sits down. These beasts are boasting before him, we read in verse 25. Coming before God, claiming to be more powerful, more mighty, boasting about who they are. And then we read this in verse 9. As I looked, thrones were set in place, and the Ancient of Days took his seat. His clothing was as white as snow. The hair of his head was white like wool. His throne was flaming with fire, and its wheels were all ablaze. A river of fire was flowing, coming out from before him. Thousands upon thousands attended him. 10,000 times 10,000 stood before him. The court was seated, and the books were opened. Right? It's not the meeting of a war cabinet trying to figure out what do we do next. Probably a better example of this scene and the power we're seeing in it is, we all heard the thunder just go over this morning, right? And feel it kind of rattle us. Imagine that times 30 billion. That is the power we're witnessing. See, this is a courtroom setting that determines what happens to the one who's already been defeated and is awaiting judgment. Because there's never been another possible outcome. The very next thing we read in verse 11, then I continued to watch because of the boastful words the horn was speaking. I kept looking until the beast was slain and its body destroyed and thrown into the blazing fire. God wins. The beast is slain and its boasting is shown for the foolishness it is. But that's not all Daniel sees, is it? What else does he find out in this vision? Daniel finds out that he is not alone. 10,000 times 10,000. It's not like a literal number. It's Daniel saying, there were more people than I could ever possibly count here before God. And Daniel is standing among them, God's people, gathered together, witnessing justice be passed down on evil. Witnessing what we yearn for when we see and experience injustice in the world. God's justice, justice that is perfect and satisfies because it comes from God. A God who no power can match, as much as they might rage and boast and destroy. See, things are worse than we think, but God is more powerful than we could possibly imagine. God wins, and he always will win. Point three, the Son of Man sits enthroned already. Daniel looks and sees this in verse 13. He says, in my vision at night I looked, and there before me was one like a Son of Man, coming with the clouds of heaven. He approached the Ancient of Days and was led into his presence. He was given authority, glory, and sovereign power. All nations and peoples of every language worshipped him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion that will not pass away, and his kingdom is one that will never be destroyed. The Son of Man, the one Jesus constantly referred to himself as. Something like 80 times or something throughout the Gospels. Jesus says this in Mark 8:31. He then began to teach them, his followers, that the Son of Man must suffer many things and be rejected by the elders, the chief priests, and the teachers of the law, and that he must be killed, and after 3 days, rise again. Now in Daniel 7:13, we need to notice something. See, the Son of Man isn't going from the Ancient of Days. The Son of Man is going to the Ancient of Days, led into his presence, where he is given all authority, glory, and sovereign power, where he is worshipped by all as God. He's given everlasting dominion and a kingdom that will never be destroyed. The kingdom that Jesus kept talking about over and over again when he came. The kingdom we've all been invited into if we trust in him as our Savior, as our Lord. He's the one with true authority and dominion who is worthy of worship. And in Daniel 7, we get to see his coronation service. That's what's happening. Now, Daniel wants to know what all of this means. So he goes up to someone, he taps him on the shoulder, and he wants to find out what's happening. Verse 17 to 18, we read, the four great beasts are four kings that will rise from the earth, but the holy people of the Most High will receive the kingdom and will possess it forever. Yes, forever and ever. See, Daniel and the 10 times 10,000 he stands with, including us who follow Jesus, this is the reality for us. We are those holy people who get to be part of this kingdom. See, this is God's promise to us, proven the moment Jesus died on the cross. There's a passage up on the screen that Paul the Apostle wrote in Colossians chapter 2. We read there, when you were dead in your sins and in the uncircumcision of your flesh, God made you alive with Christ. He forgave us all our sins, having cancelled the charge of our legal indebtedness which stood against us and condemned us. See, so that we face the same consequences as the beasts, right? But he saved us from that. He's taken it away, we read, nailing it to the cross. And having disarmed the powers and authorities, he made a public spectacle of them, triumphing over them by the cross. The beast raging, destroying, trampling, boasting, defeated by the death of Jesus on the cross. God took what looked weak in the world and he used it to triumph over what looked impossibly powerful in the world. God took what looked like defeat in the eyes of the world and looks like foolishness, and he used it to gain the greatest victory we could imagine. See, this is the reality. This is what the glimpse behind the curtain reveals, that Jesus has won. that Jesus sits enthroned right now and that his people will inherit his kingdom. God wins. It doesn't matter who rises against him. It doesn't matter how powerful they seem or how many of them there are. God wins. When life seems to be trampling all over us, this is the reminder we can give ourselves. This is the truth we can speak to each other. How God wins. It doesn't matter what rises up and seeks to overwhelm. It doesn't matter how powerful it seems, how destructive it seems, whether it's a person, a people, or a situation you're in, God wins. No matter how bad things might look to us, God has already won the final victory, and his reign gives us lasting hope. See, we need to be reminded constantly of this hope. In Daniel 7, it's like Daniel's attention gets constantly drawn back to the little horn. It becomes this all-consuming and terrifying thing in Daniel's sight. It's like it's all he can focus on. But what happens twice in this passage? Well, twice when Daniel's attention is riveted on this beast, on the little horn, his attention gets torn back, gets torn away from that. No. Back to the hope we have. Verse 17 to 18, the four beasts are four kings that will rise from the earth, but the holy people of the Most High will receive the kingdom and will possess it forever. Yes, forever and ever. Back to this hope that he has. But then again, the next verse, Daniel's attention is drawn toward the little horn. But at the end of the chapter, Daniel's attention torn away from that, brought back to the hope we have in verse 26 and 27. The court will sit and the power of the beast will be taken away and completely destroyed forever. Then the sovereignty, power, and greatness of all the kingdoms under heaven will be handed over to the holy people of the Most High. His kingdom will be an everlasting kingdom, and all rulers will worship and obey him. See, what's happening? When Daniel's attention is drawn to the terror of the beast, he is brought back constantly to the hope of Christ's victory that belongs to us, his kingdom, free from sin and death and evil and suffering. We need to be constantly reminded of this victory as well. See, when you see the overwhelming oppression and disaster and evil that seems to permeate the world, look to the cross and be reminded of the hope Christ gives because of what he's done. When you feel like life is getting the better of you and it's getting harder and harder to keep going, you look to the cross and be reminded of the hope that Christ gives. And when Satan's lies come and whisper that you're a failure, that you're shameful and could never belong as one of God's people, look to the cross and be reminded of the hope Christ gives. Of his grace and his mercy, of his forgiveness for you. This hope was never tied to our ability to continue on and win against those things, to rise up ourselves. It's a hope tied to the victory Jesus has already won. That's where our hope is. Now, it doesn't mean that we aren't troubled by those things. Look at Daniel in verse 28. This is the end of the matter. I, Daniel, was deeply troubled by my thoughts and my face turned pale. He's frightened. Doesn't mean we don't be frightened as well by those things or that we aren't troubled by them. But it means that we've seen the person ducking behind the doorway ahead of us to try to surprise us. It means how we know how to respond to those times. To look to the cross and be reminded of the hope Christ gives. And you think, it's no wonder that Daniel doesn't get lured in by the world's proud independence from God, right? Not when he sees the reality from God's perspective. There's no way that he's going to get sucked in. What about you? And why can Daniel keep calm and carry on serving, praying, trusting God? Because of what we've seen. The Ancient of Days. The Son of Man enthroned on high, defeating sin, death, and evil once for all. Because no matter how bad things might look to us, God has already won the final victory, and his reign gives us lasting hope. There's so much to take from this series on Daniel. We've been looking at it since the start of the year. And right back at the start of the year, when we first started looking at this book, Daniel Ekerman and I, we got together and we started writing a song to kind of help reinforce some of these truths for us. So we're going to actually teach that to you right now. We're going to sing that song together. But the chorus of that song says, this. It says, we sing in a foreign land, exiles safe in a sovereign hand, all other kingdoms fade, Almighty God, forever He will reign. It's an amazing thing to be able to sing together this great truth of God's victory. So I'm going to invite you, as you're able, to stand up. We're going to teach this song to you, and then we're going to sing it all together.